Good afternoon. I'm going to call the meeting of the Ad Hoc Strategic Planning Committee meeting to order. First item of business is roll call. Winter?
Chair Carvalho?
Here.
Vice Chair Perkins?
Here.
Regent Arascada?
There.
Regent Carter?
Present.
Regent Dubrava?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you, Winter. Although it's not on our agenda, I'm going to read our land acknowledgement. Before beginning, we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand on the land of the Washishu, Washo, Numu, Northern Paiute, Niue, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Next on the agenda is public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There's no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Public comment in Reno?
There is no public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment in Las Vegas? No public comment. Is there any written public comment, Winter? Thank you. All right, we'll move on to item number two, Chair's Report. As the chair of this committee, I'm pleased to be working with Vice Chair Regent Laura Perkins, along with committee members Regents Arascada, Carter, and Dubrava. As this is the first meeting of the committee, we'll be spending our time today gaining a greater understanding of what strategic planning is, hearing from President Acharya and President Hahn, who will provide the institutional and student perspectives on strategic planning, in addition to the national perspective on this important work. We will also learn how the committee will work in lockstep with Chancellor Rose and Vice Chancellors Brooks and Cage to formulate a strategic plan that will be presented to the whole board for input and eventual approval and adoption. I believe that this is the right time to begin anew the strategic planning process. We had a strategic plan that was approved in 2017 that served the board from 2018 through 2021. It was a great foundation that gave our system the five goals and metrics that all of our decisions are currently based upon. But we know that the higher education landscape is ever changing, and ENSHE has matured and grown since the inception of that plan. The time is right to begin a new deliberate process to build upon those five goals and metrics to take our system through the next several years and to improve our delivery of educational services to the citizens of Nevada. Chancellor Rose has already begun hosting listening sessions to garner feedback at our Grade 8. And we've received a lot of feedback from many different stakeholder groups who were in attendance. Two sessions have already taken place, the first at CSN North Las Vegas in December, and the second at the DRI Reno campus earlier this month. Both sessions had robust discussion around the importance of a system approach, notably around a more intentional approach to increase inclusion and diversity of students and faculty and staff, and also how to centralize the infrastructure of research activities within the system. Unfortunately, the listening session that was scheduled for January 19th at GBC had to be canceled, but we are rescheduling that in the next few months. I look forward to hearing from Chancellor Rose on the schedule of upcoming virtual and in-person sessions. And now I'll move to item number three, Chancellor's Report.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho, Vice Chair Perkins, members of the committee, and regents at large. For the record, Melody Rose, Chancellor of the Nevada System of Higher Education. It's a real pleasure to have everyone gathered today. Really appreciate the service of regents in supporting this work and guiding us throughout the process over the next year. And I thought this morning as I was reading the news with my coffee that it was almost serendipity that today is the International Day of Education. It is being celebrated worldwide starting today for the next year. And the theme for this year's International Day of Education is Changing Course, Transforming Education. And I just thought that that was a very meaningful beginning to our day and beginning to this board process, very much knowing that we are in partnership with our colleagues across the world as we look at how strategically to position ourselves in education for the betterment of all humankind. As you know, I feel really passionately about conducting a strategic planning process that is both comprehensive and extraordinarily inclusive. And you will hear today the beginning of that inclusion, and we will share feedback with all of you, of course, for your reflection and guidance as we hear it from our communities across the Silver State. So today you will also hear from Vice Chancellors Brooks and Cage about the progress to date that we have made. We'll seek your input on that progress. And also, of course, share with you the planning from here on out, and really look forward to both your guidance, your input, and your participation. I want to say we've had several regents attend our two open sessions, listening sessions, at CSN North Las Vegas and DRI North. And it was very meaningful to have you there in attendance with us, hearing the same things that we are hearing. And my hope is that members of the committee and the board at large will be able to find future events that you can all participate in and help us as we guide a plan toward your eventual approval. So with that, Madam Chair, I conclude my remarks.
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. On to item number 4, purpose and importance of strategic planning. So I'll turn it over to Vice Chancellor of Public Affairs and Advancement, Constance Brooks, PhD, and Vice Chancellor for Workforce Development and Chief Innovation Officer, Caleb Cage.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman Carvalho. Good afternoon to you all, Regents, Chancellor, colleagues, and INCHI community. For the record, I'm Constance Brooks, the Vice Chancellor of Public Affairs and Advancement. And I purposely mention the INCHI community in my introduction because as a proud alum of one of the Grade 8, as a current administrator and adjunct faculty within this system, I take great pride in assisting with one of the most transparent and inclusive processes in goal setting that we've ever experienced. And so I'm excited and delighted to be tasked with serving to help assist us in our strategic goal planning exercises and excited to present to you today. So before we get started with our meaningful discussion today, we thought it of import to provide some level setting and just an understanding as to why we are here and what we intend to accomplish. And although this information has been presented in prior Board of Regents meetings, we thought we'd start with the basics today. In this brief presentation, we aim to accomplish level setting to promote greater understanding as to why we are engaged in this significant work, its overall purpose, and the opportunities and challenges that await us within our pursuit. But before doing so, we have a video. We have video greetings from the U.S. Department of Education. We have Dr. Michelle Cooper, Deputy Secretary for Higher Education Programs, who offers us with greetings as we begin our work.
Hello and Happy New Year. I bring greetings on behalf of the U.S. Department of Education, and it is a pleasure to be here with you all today, albeit virtually. I recently met with some of your leaders, and that was actually in person. I met with Chancellor Rose and Dr. Brooks, and I learned a great deal about the work that is happening in Nevada. I was excited by what I heard, and I'm actually still very excited about what we're doing here at the department, and hopefully things that we can do together to partner, to amplify your work, and to do things that can help you better support your students and to continue to improve your institutions. I think one thing we can definitely all agree upon is that the pandemic has changed the way we approach higher education. As you know better than anyone, students are struggling. They are struggling with mental health challenges. They are struggling with academic challenges, they are struggling with housing and food insecurity, and so much more. And the President Biden recognizes these struggles. And that's why he signed the American Rescue Plan, which is a $40 billion investment in higher education. The American Rescue Plan more than doubles the first two COVID recovery packages. And when you combine them all together, it provides higher education with $76 billion to support students and institutions during this pandemic. We have worked to ensure that institutions are able to access and utilize these funds. Many college leaders have shared their best practices for supporting students. And these best practices take on a range of things, from helping students to secure housing and food to helping cover expenses for textbooks. Several colleges have also used HRF funds, those are the pandemic recovery funds, to eliminate institutional debt and to stop transcript withholding. Reforming these practices are important because they help students to persist, re-enroll, and transfer. And I know that transfer between 2 and 4 year institutions is an important thing for your system, and you have a unique opportunity to strengthen that pathway for students. In addition to hearing from college leaders, we've actually heard from some students too, including one from Sierra College right here in Nevada. And this student reached out and shared how the emergency funds that she received from her college allowed her to purchase some textbooks and even to get some repairs on her car so that she could get back and forth to work. We know that many of you also have testimonials about how these emergency relief funds have been helping your institutions and your students. And I invite you to share that information with us directly. We would love to hear from you. Another priority of the Biden administration is college affordability and the issue of student debt. We are hopeful that Congress will soon make historic investments in college affordability, which will include increasing the Pell Grant. At the Department of Education, we have already taken steps to improve student loan borrowers by canceling nearly $13 billion in student loan debt for those students who went to colleges that frauded them, students who became permanently disabled, and even students who earned, those students who have already earned forgiveness through the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Finally, we plan to do even more to invest and support colleges that are inclusive and are committed to helping many, many more students of all backgrounds graduate and enter a career or continue their education into graduate school. The Biden administration is laser focused on equity in all that we do. Equitable recovery, equitable financing of our institutions, and closing equity gaps among students. This is an ambitious to-do list, but we have a very strong leader in Secretary Cardona and our Undersecretary James Cabal. We also have a talented staff, a diverse staff, and people who are committed to working right alongside of you. People like you who are visionaries at your institutions, people who are doing the hard work of making student success a priority and serving the students in your on your campus and in your community. We know that you're tackling problems and we want to be here to help you do your work even better. So I look forward to getting to know you all more. I invite you to reach out to our office at any time and recognize that we are your partners and we want to help you build back better. Thank you.
Thank you. And so as Dr. Cooper stated, the pandemic has indeed changed the way we approach higher education. In fact, we are still in the midst of change as this pandemic continues. And so it is incumbent upon us to use fluid goal setting and strategic planning to respond to the greater opportunities of demands that await us with our students, staff, and faculty, especially as we continue to respond to their needs, but also while doing so, plan for our future. A bit of history for strategic planning, especially with regarding higher education. Strategic planning gained popularity at U.S. colleges and universities in the mid-1990s and the mid-2000s. During the mid-2000s, increased competition and reduced financial resources led to higher expectations of accountability from government and accrediting bodies, which shifted institutions' focus to objective measures of performance and financial sustainability. Systems and institutions saw strategic planning as an opportunity to adopt business management approaches to issues such as assessing competitive environments, tracking progress toward goals, and assessing resource allocation. And so today, just about every higher education institution and system has embraced developing an updated strategic plan. And so in higher education, we enjoy the gift of frequent and regular formal discourse, as we have regent meetings on a regular basis, various task forces, councils, faculty senate meetings, student government, and other affinity groups that meet across our system. Those entities and those organizations and affinity groups and the regents have robust agendas that are consistently packed with issues and discussion points that allow us to problem solve and to plan for both budgetary and academic short and long-term goals, with all of this work being guided by our overall mission. However, in the midst of our many convenings, we must take the time to pause and examine whether we are truly adjusting to the current student and workforce demands, whether we are consistently operating through a lens of equity, whether we are maintaining relevancy and competitiveness in the higher education marketplace, and in some instances, whether we are determining if we are clearly defining our role in co-developing solutions for our state, our country, and our world. This important exercise of organizational self-reflection and forecasting helps us to answer all of those questions and to determine what and who do we need to achieve and surpass our goals, and how will we then know when we get there. This is what the exercise of strategic planning can do for ENCHI. And with that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Vice Chancellor of Workforce Development and Chief Innovation Officer, Kayla Cage.
Great, thank you, Dr. Brooks. This is Caleb Cage for the record. Would you hit the slides one more? I'll do it. So as Dr. Brooks so ably said in her introductory remarks in going over the overview and the purpose of strategic planning, many important points, but one point that really stands out to me, and that is during fluid situations or times when the facts on the ground are very fluid, it's important to set dynamic goals and goals that can allow your organization to evolve as the landscape evolves over time. And so that's where we get to the opportunities here. The opportunities presented by strategic planning, especially for an organization with such a clear mission as higher education and the system of higher education in particular, is that it allows us to really create alignment within an organization towards specific goals, often referred to as a North Star or the overall objective of an organization. And that allows us to, as a system, coordinate efforts that will allow us to break cycles of management by crisis. The idea of just reacting to the next situation, whether it is a budgetary crisis or some other crisis that we may face or our institutions may face, that we can really be proactive in the face of those challenges and ensure that our organizations have the ability to see the challenges coming, to resource appropriately, excuse me, and to ensure that there is buy-in and commitment from across the institutions and across the system to navigate those challenges. Strategic planning also provides the opportunity of increasing buy-in. As you heard Dr. Brooks say, and the Chancellor and Chair of this committee, Chair Carvalho, note earlier, we've been reaching out to campuses, doing our listening sessions, hearing people, and you'll hear later what we've been hearing, a little bit of what we've been hearing. But hearing that input from people directly, being able to listen to people's concerns, listen to people's ideas, and to address them in a way where they know they're being heard and they know that we can we're taking what they're saying seriously. It also provides the opportunity to empower leaders to make those decisions based on what the board and the chancellor provide through a strategic plan, so that they know they're working the institutional leadership know that they're working towards the initiatives, the goals, the outcomes, the measurable deliverables that are of value to this board, to the state of Nevada, to the chancellor, and otherwise, and also allows us to work to maximize the use of resources, which I know is important to everyone here, by reducing gaps in services and creating opportunities for collaboration, reducing overlap in services as well. The challenges associated with strategic planning are almost all associated with organizations that engage in strategic planning with too narrow of a focus. And these can be seen in the three bullet points here. Basically, it is when strategic planning is conducted within the prism of the organization's current comfort zone, its current budget and capabilities that it sees in front of them without envisioning where they want the organization to go going forward. And this can these are challenges because they can present real opportunities for, or they can prevent, rather, real opportunities for growth, for increased coordination, and otherwise that a strategic planning process can provide. So with that, I will conclude, and we're happy to answer any questions you may have. With these four points that we felt were important in providing to you here, while there are challenges, we believe that the opportunities and benefits associated with strategic planning outweigh those challenges, that establishing organizational alignment and accountability is essential to our long-term success, that the higher education landscape is currently transforming nationally, and this will give us an opportunity to transform with it, and that this process, the strategic planning process that we're participating in, and this board is overseeing, this committee is overseeing on behalf of the board. This is just the beginning and will allow us many opportunities to grow as this living document is developed in the fall of this year and acted upon in the years after. So with that, Chair Carvalho, we would be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Cage and Vice Chancellor Brooks. Are there any questions or comments from the Regent members of the committee or other Regents who are participating today? Oh, Regent Brooks, did you have something?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho. I appreciate it. In listening to the opening remarks regarding the strategic plan itself, what it is, my question is, I'm wondering, as we currently sit today, as a system, is the system not past the, actually, let me rephrase that. It seems to me like the system is past the general concept and basic process of what a strategic plan is. And it seems as though the metrics that we received last week and last month from various institutions would help, I think, maybe even answer some of the considerations that we saw on the slides in terms of what it is to create a plan and what are the institutional goals and how does that work in totality of expectation throughout the state. So, yeah.
Sorry, Regent Brooks, this is Caleb Cage for the record. I was having trouble with the push to talk button here. So, Regent Brooks, to you, or excuse me, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, to you and through you to Regent Brooks. If I understood the point correctly, I think that you bring a really important point up, and that is the institutions are engaged in strategic planning as a part of their accreditation, as a part of board policy, and part of just managing large organizations. They have metrics, institutional metrics, like I believe you were referring to from the University of Nevada, Reno, during the last meeting, and regularly report on and update those strategic plans. I think that's exactly right. I think that is critical input. The input that we're receiving from the listening sessions, the input that we'll receive from this committee and from the board and from other entities will allow us to create a coherent and cohesive strategic plan for the system, for across all of the system, to make sure all of those metrics and plans that are associated with those metrics are aligned towards the goals that the board identifies, and to make sure that we're all measuring the right things and the same things, and we're using the same language, and we're working towards the same goals so that we can maximize the opportunity, but the use of the resources that we have here as a system as effectively as we possibly can. So I'm not sure if that answers your question or not, but if I misunderstood it, I'm happy to provide more.
Regent Brooks, did you have a follow-up?
No, I appreciate that. It answered some of it, and I think that's good enough. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. I would also reiterate that strategic planning, as Vice Chancellor Cage has said, is a dynamic process, a kind of a living document that changes with the times. And as I stated earlier, we have a strategic plan. I actually have a little one-page kind of thing that shows that our strategic plan, the current one, or what was current, was from 2018 to 2021. So I think it's important to revisit what our goals and metrics are, as any successful organization would do. And I appreciate your comment regarding the institutions, because I think it's very important for us to take their plans and goals for the future into consideration, because as one system, we have to work together towards those visions and goals, and they have to be aligned throughout our system. So I do appreciate that point that you brought up. Yes, Regent Perkins.
Thank you. Metrics were mentioned several times throughout the report, and how are we going to determine success? Because I know our last strategic plan had you can't have a goal unless you have a finish line. So is that something that's going to be added, changed, or included in the next strategic plan?
I'll have the Chancellor respond to that.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho, to you and through you to Regent Perkins, Vice Chair Perkins, excuse me. You know, we've had this conversation a few times, and I think we see this similarly, that if we don't measure it, we can't manage it. And so this is one of the areas that I think we're going to be able to really build upon the more recent efforts around strategic visioning, is by adding metrics and outcomes and accountability measures that we can use for our own growth and improvement, but also as a measure of transparency to the taxpayer, to policymakers, friends and detractors alike. And so I appreciate you raising that very much. In terms of sequencing, what I would imagine as the two vice chairs will be explaining to us a little bit later, of course, it wouldn't be until after the board formally adopts a full-blown strategic plan that we would then take the next step and add in all of those measurables. So we don't want to start adding those until you all have approved the direction, but that will absolutely be an essential component, and make sure that it's not a strategic plan that just sits on a shelf, which is sometimes criticism of strategic planning. So absolutely, and thank you for raising the question.
Thank you for that question. Any other comments or questions? All right. I'll move on to item number 5, student and institutional perspectives on strategic planning. I thought this was important to bring in some perspectives from stakeholders within our organization. And so first I'd like to turn turn the mic over to President Acharya. He recently went through his strategic plan again, and I think he did a great job on his, and I think he can lend some great perspective on the institutional side of this. So, President Acharya.
Thank you, Kabut Acharya, President DRI for the record. Chair Carvalho, Vice Chair Perkins, Regent Chancellor, I truly appreciate your leadership and vision as we embark on strategic planning process. Today is a terrific example of NC recognizing that a strategic plan is a living document, one that requires time, effort, and regular reassessment. I believe it's important that we visit our strategic plan every 3 to 5 years to realign with the economy, diversity, new growth opportunity, and the unexpected, such as the COVID-19 pandemic. COVID-19 has required all higher ed institutions to adjust to new realities and to new expectations of students, faculty, and staff. It's required all of us to look deeper, refocus, and reprioritize. Strategic planning is also critical for research. We must prepare for new opportunities, assess what will be needed in the years ahead, stay competitive, and anticipate the arrival of new technologies. I've also found that strategic planning is of great importance in providing a roadmap for a vision and how to achieve it. Strategic planning helps the faculty, staff, and students at NC's 8 institutions to identify and better understand where they fit into the overall NC system. This is particularly important for an institution like DRI, which is a little bit unique to the system. It puts our focus and resources on our shared goals, and it leads to internal buy-in. By establishing agreed-upon goals and metrics of achievement, it allows us to measure our progress and success. When the goals of strategic plan are clearly established, it helps guide our daily decisions. We ask ourselves, how does this project or activity align with the goals of our strategic plan? To put it simply, a strategic plan keeps us focused on the most important long-term goals, and it helps keep us from focusing only on the many immediate challenges and opportunities. So I want to share my own experience. We finished, as you, Chair Carvalho just mentioned, we finished our strategic plan last year. I want to get to also Vice Chair Perkins' questions about metrics. So what we're doing and how we're trying to implement our strategic plan. So we came up with, I believe we had 9 goals. And so for each goal, we identified several metrics. And so we finished strategic plan, and then now, right now, we have metrics. Now we're developing baseline data for that metric so that we can measure next year how much progress we've made. So I think that creating that, just having metrics is not enough. You have to have baseline data. So where do we currently sit on that particular item right now so that we can look at it a year from now and then see how much progress we've made? So that's what we're doing. I have assigned a faculty who is leading the whole process. She spends 25% of her time full-time just developing baseline data for our metrics, working with different department heads. So I think what that has allowed for us, I think for, at least for DRI, is to stay focused on our goals. And then everything we do, okay, how does this align with that particular goal, or, you know, if not? So I think that it's really, really important for our system to have a strategic plan that is forward-looking, that takes care of the present challenges, but also anticipates future opportunities, you know. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to provide my opinion on this matter, and happy to be part of it and contribute whatever I can do to help. Thank you.
Thank you, President Acharya. I really appreciate your perspective on this. I'm going to go to President Matt Hahn in Reno. He's the UNR Graduate Student Association president, and I'd like to get his perspective on strategic planning. President Hahn?
Thank you, Chair Carvalho. For the record, Matthew Hahn, Graduate Student Association President at the University of Nevada, Reno. Thank you, Chair Carvalho, Vice Chair Perkins, Regents, Chancellor Rose, Institutional Presidents, NG staff, and other distinguished guests. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. As a point of clarification, I did want to mention that I'm here today speaking informally on behalf of students of the Graduate Student Government on the importance of strategic planning and not for the Nevada, Student Alliance, in which I am the chair. So to start off, I just kind of wanted to talk a small portion about myself and how strategic planning has influenced my life personally. Throughout the third of my life that I've been with the Nevada System of Higher Education and the University of Nevada, Reno, I've found that planning a route for academic success has seldom steered me wrong. The primary example was preparing for my PhD and MBA when I was in my biotechnology master's program. By taking the time and asking questions about how my current program was structured and what would be required of me, I found I could take PhD level courses that would be applied to my master's, freeing up time down my academic road. As a result, I've come to find that the planning I carried out in early 2017, I can complete my MBA for a fraction of the cost compared if I were to solely enroll in an MBA program while only having to take about 60% of the classes that would be typically required by an MBA student. Additionally, I found that during my free time, I was able to participate in the Graduate Student Association and, with an agreement with my professor, run for president of the Graduate Student Association. So to put it shortly, I attribute a large amount of my academic success and the opportunity to be able to present to you today from the decision I made to make a plan or strategic plan back in 2017. I believe that if I had not planned out a route early on, my path would look much different than it is today. Even though my goals then, when I initially planned my academic route, were different than compared to what they are today, this roadmap provided me with a sense of direction. And to put it again simply, if I didn't know where I was going, I could have very quickly ended up somewhere where I didn't want to be. Throughout these years, my courses have shown me the importance of strategic planning because it provides the opportunity to assess the current system. Throughout my education, I've had the experience in writing multiple business plans, grants, and organizational structures, all of which revolve around the importance of strategic planning. At this point, the Nevada System of Higher Education is in a unique landscape full of opportunities for success. This, combined with the prestigious talent and dedication that the Nevada System of Higher Education has, we can briefly look into the future and anticipate opportunities within our state that others might not see. But to reach these goals that we believe will affect higher education for the future, we need to have the courage of our conviction and execute a strategy developed by individuals that have some insight from different backgrounds. That is where I believe a strategic plan is necessary. Through inclusive conversation, it can provide a direction for leaders with NSHE to look toward when determining a route for future change. Although typical opponents of a strategic plan state that you can't plan entirely for the future, a prime example is the plans within the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s or the unexpected housing crash of 2008. However, a part of the beauty of a strategic plan is that it should not be a document that's put together once and then left on a shelf or a website. It acts as a living document that can be used to interpret the current goals of the organization has, how to reach them, how to adapt in times where foresight may have turned a blind eye. Additionally, when preparing for this discussion, I currently sit on the University of Nevada, Reno's Strategic Planning Committee, where we look to NSHE goals as a North Star to ensure that we are following the path that encompasses the entire state. From this, we have also come to find that other NSHE peer institutions all have a strategic plan of their own for what they use for guidance and metrics in building out their respective institutions. In creating a strategic plan, the Nevada System of Higher Education can create a foundation where NSHE institutions look to. And by developing inclusive goals with specific metrics, we can ensure that NSHE students, faculty, and staff feel heard about their experiences while providing them a better future. And as a result, this process will allow NSHE to prioritize efforts, effectively allocate resources, align shareholder and employees on the organization's goals, and ensure that the data and sound reasoning back these goals. Together, this should pave the way for NSHE to provide better education to all their students and allow them to attain success both during and post-graduation, increasing social mobility for Nevadans throughout higher education. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, President Hahn. I appreciate you also being here today with us. Are there any questions or comments for either President Acharya or President Hahn? Nope. Well, thank you so. Regent Perkins, please.
Thank you. I was wondering, is there anybody to speak from the undergrad population on this subject, or?
If I may, for the record, Melody Rose, Chair Carvalho, to Regent Perkins. At this point, not today, but we will certainly accommodate that in the future. You know, we're trying to juggle a lot of different inputs in one meeting, but certainly happy to pursue that if you'd like to see that in the future.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. We did talk about that, and like the Chancellor said, we hope to have a lot of input from a lot of different stakeholders, and I agree that students at every level in our institutions are important to hear from. So thank you for that. Okay. I will move on to item number five. Item number six, national best practices in strategic planning. And I will turn it over to Vice Chancellor Brooks and Vice Chancellor Cage again.
Thank you very much, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho. This is Caleb Cage for the record. I'm going to move relatively quickly through this. This slide deck here is intended to provide an overview of some of the examples of strategic planning that we're seeing from college and university systems around the country that are seen as advanced, seen as best practices, but really that represent a spectrum of types of strategic plans. The strategic plans that are referenced in here are provided and linked in your agendas, I'm sure you're aware, but we wanted to provide an overview of sort of how the different systems around the country, structured differently, serving different populations, all of those things, but how they have approached the idea of strategic planning. And we'll see that they range from a very high-level visioning process or exercise in developing a vision to something that's more producing or determined to produce metrics and other deliverables for all of you. So these are again just to provide an overview. They're informing our process as we go. We wanted to make sure that it was available to you so that you were aware of sort of where some of these ideas were coming from. And able to provide input based off of the same information we were receiving. So as you'll see from here, we look at the SUNY strategic plan, the University of Georgia system strategic plan, and the University of Wisconsin system strategic plan. And we'll provide some detail on each of these in as we go through the slides here. So first, the State University of New York system, some context here, wanted to provide some information here so we were all aware of, you know, like is none of these institutions or systems are alike in any way, nor is NSHE like any of them, but their variety is represented in the context here. So it's made up of a total of 64 institutions, 500,000 students, 88,000 faculty. The strategic plan that was provided to you is titled 2010 and Beyond, and it appears from reading it that it's a 10-year strategic plan that goes through 2020. I think it's still provided, even though it's beyond its 10-year date here, it still provided a very interesting perspective on how they approach strategic planning. One thing that's really important here to point out is if you look at just the SUNY system plan, I think you would have a very different idea of what strategic planning could be than if you looked at all three of these strategic plans together. And that's the purpose of this presentation here. And that's because the SUNY system is really a very high-level vision statement and aspirational goals for this very large 64 institution organization system. And it is intended for the institutions within that system to align with those aspirational goals and that high-level vision. So please feel free to stop me at any time during this. But some examples of what we're referring to here is they really were, again, think about where they were in 2010 or 2009 when they were developing this. This was a time of the Great Recession nationally. This was the state university system of New York that was seeking to find what their opportunity was in the rebuilding of the New York economy. And you can see that they did that around six big ideas. And I won't read them for you here, but you can see that it was these were the areas where they thought their institutions could invest and could align in order to have the greatest amount of impact. And that ranges from, again, the conceptual approach of an entrepreneurial century, which is an interesting paradigm in its own right, all the way to something that's far more practical, which is a healthier New York and vibrant communities. And then the last here, which I think is especially visionary and high level, is SUNY in the world. And this is how the 64 institutions, the 88,000 faculty and staff, the 500,000 students that make up the SUNY system interact and engage with the world to make sure that New York is the state of New York is best prepared to pull out of the recession in 2008, 2009, and 2010, and really move into the next decade as successfully and as ably as they possibly can. Again, the drawbacks, I've mentioned it a couple of times. This is a very high-level plan. I encourage you to take a look at the document that's included. There are no metrics. There are beyond these big ideas, it does not get down into the goal-making level or the mission assignment or any of the alignment. That is all to be developed after the fact of this. I think that's a drawback or at least something that's distinct in this plan. They certainly were able to use it or to develop this in a way that was useful to them. So not a criticism, but necessarily, but an indication of, I think, perhaps our vision, as Vice Chair Perkins was talking about a moment ago, we really want to move towards organizational alignment and metrics through our strategic plan. So next we have the University of Georgia system. So here again, just context: 26 institutions, 330,000 students, 48,000 faculty. So much larger than the system here in the state of Nevada. Again. But their strategic plan is more up to date. It's 2019 to 2014. and it is very much more of a traditional strategic planning model, at least in my experience in working on strategic planning. This is, I think, more of what many people expect to see when they think of a strategic plan. Additionally, it's very internally focused, where the SUNY system plan that we just went over is very externally focused. SUNY and the world is their sixth big idea indicated. Their University of Georgia system strategic plan was very internally focused on that. We'll get into some of the details here. Again, like I said, it's a very traditional plan. But it provides some important context in the development of their plan, how they engaged with stakeholders, how they gathered information, what processes and procedures they used, and all of that is helpful and frankly aligns with some of the things that we're doing here in the state of Nevada as well, from engaging with key stakeholders to listening sessions and otherwise. As I said, very traditional plan, very internally focused. You can see that in the four goals that are provided here: student success, responsible stewardship, that's, you know, of course, referring to the public resources they manage, economic competitiveness, and community impact. I think, again, developing drawbacks here, analyzing drawbacks here, I believe that this plan has the potential of at least being critiqued, or a potential criticism of this would be that it is too internally focused and falls prey to some of the challenges we talked about in our previous, which is it's within the comfort zone, the budgetary model and the structure of the organization, and it's not going to lead to something that is transformational in the long run or in the big picture. So again, an approach, I think it's probably very effective to meet their needs, but very different, again, from the SUNY model. And and different, I think, from what we're pursuing here in the state of Nevada as well. But an important benchmark as we look at how we want to pursue strategic planning in the state of Nevada. The final is the University of Wisconsin system, which again, providing context here, I think it's important that if the SUNY plan, the SUNY 64 institutions that make up the SUNY system was largely external and visionary, the Georgia plan was largely internal and traditional, the University of Wisconsin strategic plan for their system falls between the two, and I think does a good job of balancing the benefits of both approaches pretty well. So again, provided here for your information, 26 institutions, 13 four-year and 13 two-year. So not all four-year institutions like you would see in the SUNY system, and half and half on their overall distribution of four-year and two-year. 182,000, that should say, students, my apologies for that, and 40,000 faculty and staff. So smaller system, much more like ours in the fact that it is an overall system, a combined system that allows synergies and opportunities that I think we're trying to build upon here in the system in the state of Nevada. Finally, their strategic plan covers 2015 to 2020. They do provide some innovations that I'll get to on the next slide here. And as I said previously, I believe it is internally and externally focused in ways that the SUNY system and the University of Georgia system, respectively, were less so. So their key takeaways here, already covered, is that it falls somewhere in between. And I really thought that the innovation here that was really interesting was it was developed through the lens of what the University of Wisconsin system can do to serve the needs of the state. And I know that's something we talk a lot about in my world of workforce development. How do we meet the workforce development needs of the communities that we serve? How does our research institute provide research capabilities and meet the needs, the research needs of the communities here in Nevada? The other two talked about their systems' roles in their communities. The University of Wisconsin strategic plan really focuses on that. They framed theirs in terms of system level priorities and institutional level emphasis. So each one of the priorities, they show how the institutions that make up their system emphasize those priorities and achieve them. Focused on four areas here, again, not terribly different from what we've seen in the University of Georgia plan: educational pipeline, university experience, business and community mobilization, and operational excellence. And there was a drawback here, was there was, I don't want to say there was no mention of, but there was limited attention paid to the lenses of equity and diversity, which is something that this board has highlighted as important, and certainly our institutions are working to highlight in their strategic plans as well. Another drawback would be much like the Georgia model. This is not going to be a plan that is transformational. There's no aspirational goals here associated with this, which I think we have the opportunity and the timing to do here in the state of Nevada. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Brooks to conclude and add any additional comments that you may have.
It's okay. Thank you, Vice Chancellor Cage. Thank you for the wonderful review of what we consider best practices in the national marketplace for higher education. And so herein lies the opportunity for us to go beyond these baseline models to serve as a model for the rest of the nation, in particular in this very unique moment of transformation as we are trying to move through the pandemic and into an endemic state. Our focus is on transforming the system and to meet the needs of the future, as has been stated. And we benefit from these best practices and others as we chart our own course. And so again, thank you to Caleb for providing, or Vice Chancellor Cage for providing the in-depth analysis and research. And with that, we are available for questions.
Regent Carter.
A few comments and I'll end it a question. So when I read the University of Wisconsin one, I felt like it's almost where we are right now. You know, have we not collapsed all of the things that they individually listed down to our five things? I think we're kind of at that place right there. And their metrics and goals, like you said, were very vague. Increase or, you know, something like that. Not very granular. Now, if I look at the Georgia report, it's incredibly granular down to, you know, 67,854 to 74,916. Where do we anticipate being between really, really vague and really, really granular on coming up with metrics or goals?
Not reading the body language correctly.
Sorry, would you like me to go? I'm happy to take a...
I'm happy to start.
Go ahead.
And then you can augment. So thank you, Chair Carvalho, to you and through you to Regent Carter. I appreciate the question. We also have talked many times about data, and I think we share a similar passion around measuring and reporting. And part of the delicate dance here is not overreach into the institutions, but rather metrics and goals that serve the whole. So my preference, and of course this is a place where we welcome Regent input and guidance, as Regent Brooks said earlier, the institutions are measuring at the granule level. A system should be an aggregate of that effort to make sure that we come up to a whole that is comprehensive and serves at a statewide level. So I think there's a bit of a delicate dance there. And I also assume going forward that it would be the Board of Regents who would establish those metrics and guidance at the system level. So I anticipate having many more conversations around that and getting input, guidance, buy-in from the regents, because I do think that there's a balance. To me, the beauty of a system, and certainly especially the beauty of being a single system, is that at the system office level, we can take a sort of 50,000-foot level of what is needed to be successful across the entirety of the state. So that we're not making, so that we're making sure that there is not duplication of effort or whole populations without opportunities. So I think those are the sort of philosophical guidelines that I carry, and you know my colleagues here, and we certainly have a lot of data expertise in the cabinet. So I would also yield to them if they wanted to share anything more on this point.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Regent Brooks.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, I appreciate it. I was just wondering, and please excuse me if this may be redundant in terms of what Regent Carter may have mentioned regarding metrics. I was taking some notes and then Regent Carter started speaking. My question is, are there considerations for looking at the history of strategic planning in Nevada as it coincides with the state's overall plan? And are there specific similarities between our institutions and the institutions in New York, Georgia, and Wisconsin that would help develop specific metrics for the state of Nevada?
So, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, through you to Regent Brooks. This is Caleb Cage for the record. I guess I would need to know exactly what the state overall plan is that you're referring to. Is that the strategic plan that we're developing in this process?
You know what? I appreciate that. And so I think it's twofold. One has to do with where the governor sits with higher education in terms of goals that he sees for the state. And then the other section of that would have to do with what the system perceives as those most important goals in terms of overall functionality for the state of Nevada, with all of the institutions essentially on the same page, which I feel that we have regarding the goals and implementations, but that's essentially what I'm referring to. So the governor's vision of the state, and then ANCHI's vision of what this looks like.
Thank you. Caleb Cage, for the record, through you, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, to Regent Brooks. Thank you for the clarification. So I think throughout this process, one of the values and the benefits of the listening session structure and the process that we'll outline in the next presentation here is that this committee of the board, and the board officers will have it really will be essential to have input from, like I said, this committee, from the board officers, and otherwise throughout this process, so we can make sure that we're aligned with you and the institutions are aligned with us and so on. So that internal piece is covered there in the listening sessions. I know we have had, we've reached out to legislators, members of the executive branch have been to the listening sessions and provided input as well. And we've been in contact with the governor's office about what the strategic planning process looks like so that they're aware of it as well, to make sure that we're navigating that process. But at the end of the day, it will be direction and input from this committee. It'll be direction and approval from the board. That I think is the proper governance structure for ANCHI as we carry out this strategic planning process. So it's there's a little bit of work that has to be done right now in making sure that we're engaging. And I think the timeline and the process that we will get to in the next presentation will show how all of these pieces fit together. But I think, as we've said from the beginning, the input, approval, considerations, and recommendations from this board will be the primary driver for our strategic planning process.
Thank you, Mr. Cage. I appreciate that. The only follow-up that I would have is in regards to New York, Georgia, and Wisconsin. Is there something to develop very specific regarding metrics for Nevada when you take a look at those three states?
So this is Caleb Cage again, Chair Carvalho, through you to Regent Brooks. There, as far as metric development goes, I can't confidently say that we're at to the point right now in our process or near the point in our process where we have really clear identification of what those metrics are going to be and what those are going to look like for this system, for ANCHI. The three models or the three strategic plans that were presented here were presented as models for more of the how systems use strategic planning at a very high level. And as we go through our process and get input from this board, from the Board of Regents regarding what strategic goals you would like measurements on, our metrics on, and how we can align that with the work that the institutions are doing, I think it'll become more clear. But as far as I know right now, I feel staffing this process internally for the chancellor, I feel like we're too early in the process to identify what those benefits may be from the three models presented.
Thank you, Mr. Cage. I appreciate your time. That's all the questions that I have, Chair Carvalho. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Brooks. I'll go next to Regent Arascada.
Thank you, Regent Del Carlo. Unfortunately, or fortunately, Regent Brooks just stole three of my four questions. So thank you very much, Byron. I do appreciate that, Regent Brooks. But let me just focus on one. I too read those different colleges and their strategic plan. I believe one was 26 pages, one 28, and the one out of Wisconsin, I don't recall. Regardless, they're all three of those locations are triple in size, quadruple in budget, a few of them. And I was just curious if we, or Vice Chancellor Cage, if you're willing, or have you looked at other campuses or systems that are comparable to the system of Nevada higher education? Just example, New Mexico is at 112,000 students. Utah, although about 80,000 more than us. Idaho, all of these are comparison in sizes, systems, enrollment, faculty, budgets. And they too have a fairly robust strategic plan listed online. I was just curious if any of those have been looked at also.
Chair Carvalho, through you to Regent Arascata, Caleb Cage for the record. I will look at any strategic plan of any system, of any organization, higher education or not, that could help us make the best possible plan for the state of Nevada. In previous roles throughout the state, or throughout the state, I have regularly taken a look at New Mexico, Utah, and Idaho, and Arizona often, as four states that represent different geographies in the state of Nevada. And I agree. I think those are very important models to look at. These three were provided here again with the context on the initial slide for all three of them to recognize. SUNY with 500,000 students right now, that's enormous compared to the system of higher education here in the state of Nevada. So very much looking at what models and what processes these systems used in order to carry out their strategic planning process. But as we move forward, very interested in seeing plans from states that are similar to ours in population, in demographics, in funding models, and so on. So, yes, I appreciate the recommendation. That's certainly something we believe will be beneficial as well.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Cage. Regent Arascata, did you have anything else?
No, thank you. As mentioned, Regent Brooks actually knocked off three of my questions. So thank you, and thank you.
Thank you. I'll go to Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo.
Thank you. And I'm enjoying this discussion, and I'm so glad we're doing this process. I think it's really great to look at other systems and national best practices. And what I took at the thing that really jumped out at me was the University of Georgia. On one of their strategic goals was community impact. I think we've never really had that, I don't believe, in Nevada. And I think it's really, really important. And what came to my mind was that I know from traveling around the state, most people up north have never even heard of Nevada State College. They don't even know what it is. And in general, most people don't even know what our whole system does. I mean, most of us regents that go out and talk to constituents, and certainly when we campaign, I mean, it's like an education to our constituents, telling them what it is that we are and what we do. So I would really like to see in our strategic plan, I'm just my opinion, but that we focus on this community impact, and within that, weave in that slide that the chancellor showed in her overview last week about that college going culture, which our state of Nevada does not have. We rank 49th. So I would think between that would be a metric that we would really want to see raise and be a integral part of our strategic plan, with weave it in with the community, because those communities are where the K through 12 students are, and those are the ones we've got to reach out to through our collaboration with Nevada Department of Education and our school superintendents to help foster from a very young age that college-going culture. So I'd like to see all that included. I didn't have a question. I'm just so thrilled we're doing this process. And my only other comment was, I see that SUNY did, theirs was very external. I think ours needs to be both. Georgia was just mostly internal, you said, and then the other was both. I think ours has to be both. And I really think since our lives are changing so quickly, technology is changing so quickly, I'm not so comfortable having a 10-year strategic plan. I think 5 years sounds about right. I mean, who'd have thought in a 10-year plan you'd have a worldwide pandemic? So I those are just thoughts that I have, and I'm just one of 13 on this, and I'm really looking forward to lots of participation from all of our regions, because once this is done, we'll own it. So thank you very much for all this.
Thank you, Chair Del Carlo. I'm going to go to Chancellor Rose to respond to some of your comments.
Thank you, Chair Carvalho, to you and through you to Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo. Again, for the record, Melody Rose. I just wanted to speak to the question or the comment you made about the length of time for the strategic plan. It's probably one of the top questions we get is, will this be a 5-year plan, an 8-year plan, a 10-year plan? And I've been asked that in public settings, and you may have heard my response is a little vague. And I wanted to pause and explain why my response is generally vague. I think that it can be problematic to put time brackets around a strategic plan, because I think in some ways that limits our thinking. And, you know, part of my philosophy about strategic planning is that it is a fluid plan. It is something we come back to regularly, as President Acharya pointed out earlier. It is something that gets, you know, refreshed and reflected upon over the course of time in order to handle, you know, a massive emergency or disruption. And so I guess I just thought this was a good opportunity to share at least how I feel philosophically. Ultimately, this will be the board's decision. But philosophically, what I want to do is make sure that we have something that can be agile, that can be adaptable to the circumstances, and not get too fixated on a discrete period of time for all the reasons several of you have mentioned about the disruption in our world and in our industry.
Thank you for that.
Yes, thank you for that comment, Chancellor Rose. I just wanted to add a little bit of my comments to this, and I agree with the idea of not holding us down to any particular set of timeframes, although I personally, and I hope that we can discuss this more as time goes by, I like the idea of having a long-range plan, that 10-year plan, or I know Regent Moran has said this a few times, that 10,000-year plan, you know, that moonshot, that transformative type of idea. And I think that there can be a balance of both a long-term plan, but also revisit the plan every few years. I'm reminded of some discussions I've had both within my AGB Council of Finance Chairs council that I'm a member of, and also an AGB webinar that I attended that talked about, again, this idea of a strategic plan being a living document and something that needs to be revisited often. And I also think that sometimes we can get stuck in a strategic plan that might get too caught up in the metrics, and they are very important, and we need to hold ourselves accountable to those metrics. But sometimes I'm especially thinking about a financial or budget sense that, okay, we did or we didn't reach that number. We didn't get that funding or whatever it might be. And that's important, but also that idea, again, of transformational strategic planning that I
often reminded of when I think about our visit to ASU. I don't know what their strategic planning looks like, and indeed they kind of said, we don't do strategic planning, but throughout our time with them, they're very much doing strategic planning. It just isn't as formal in the sense that we're thinking of, but they're always thinking of that moonshot goal and that transformative type of planning ahead. And so I would offer that I hope that we can have those dream aspirations while also holding ourselves accountable to the things that are important for our future, especially with our students being our focus. So I think I'll move on to the next item, unless there's anything else that anybody would like to add on this item. Okay, so then I will move on to item number 7, the NSHE strategic planning process. I see a question from Chair Del Carlo. Did you have something?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. After this discussion, I do have a question. So this would be to Chancellor Rose. So just for understanding, Chancellor Rose, the resources that are put out for this, because we don't have a real big strategic plan. So this year, all the listening sessions and the consultant we'll be using, et cetera. So I understand where you're coming from on the timeline. So say it is a TAN or it's a living, breathing document. When would you feel then that the process that was used this year then in the future would be used? What would be the time frame for that? So I'm just trying to get, you know, I'm going to be on this board three more years. And then if I were to run again, I'd have another, 6 years. Yeah. Whatever, I got a long, I could be on this board till 2030, heaven forbid. You might have to bring me in my wheelchair, I don't know. But I'm just saying, if I were to stay on this board till 2030, what could I anticipate? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Carvalho, to you and through you to Chair Pro Tem Del Carlo, I appreciate that question. So what I was trying to indicate in my prior remarks is that I don't personally get too hung up in the expiration date, whether it's 5 years or 10 years, which both of which are very common in the industry. I'm just more interested in making sure that the board has continuous oversight and consistently evaluates where we are within the plan. And I would anticipate that this board would review it very consistently, and it might be something ultimately, you know, this is way down the road, but when we get to an adoption conversation, that is where we would know more and be able to, you know, make those decisions. But certainly you could bake into your approval of the plan an intention to review so that you're holding yourselves accountable and your cabinet accountable to you to make sure that that's not just a wish somewhere that somebody mentioned, but that it is the review component is embedded in the plan. And that will, I think, keep us all focused on it. I don't think it's too much to say that you should review it every other year. The world is changing so rapidly, as Vice Chair Perkins mentioned, and several of you, several others have alluded to, that I think we have a responsibility to continuous reflection and continuous assessment and improvement. So whatever that so-called end date is less important to me than my recommendation that you embed in the final plan a commitment to review. And my recommendation to you would be to do so every other year.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Yes, thank you for that clarification. I agree with that. Okay, we will move on to item number 7, the NSHE strategic planning process. I know we've talked a little bit about this already. So queued up for you, Vice Chancellors Brooks and Cage.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, Caleb Cage for the record. I'm going to move through this relatively quickly here. A lot of this is information that you have already seen and heard, but I think it's important to go back over this, especially as we kick off this committee and its oversight of the process as well. Excuse me. So with that, this is the current five goals of the board are well known to all of you, regularly discussed and a part of our ongoing conversations, an important part of the work that we do here, but very much a picture of where we stand right now in the process as we kick off this new strategic planning process. Back in June of last year, when we first started hearing, when I first started with the system, the first presentation that I saw the chancellor speak to talked about nested alignment, this concept of making sure that we have the five system strategic goals, the system level strategic goals that we just saw that are developed by you, that align with the system level initiatives, that align with the institutional initiatives. This is very much the nested alignment we're looking for with the strategic planning process, as the chancellor spoke about in September and again in December at the two board meetings. So this is, I think, a great depiction of the goal of what we're trying to achieve, again, at a very high level here. And what are our objectives and the components that we have moving forward here? You've seen this slide before during the September board meeting. Again, our objectives in this process are to maximize Board of Regents input, guidance, and support throughout the planning process, to provide extensive opportunities for stakeholder input in order to ensure equitable and agreeable outcomes, and to coordinate between multiple strategic efforts, which are primarily outlined below under the components. And these make up what we refer to as the strategic initiative coordination effort, and they are the seven system-led initiatives, the Assembly Bill 450 committee, which fortunately I wrote on there or was added on there, the title, which is Community College Workforce Training and Program Committee, and then the strategic planning process, which we're seeing here. So as you all know and can see from this slide, which has been updated since presented in September, those three components are intended to inform one another and to make sure that we are not working in any silos, and that we have the best opportunity to build on any initiatives and innovations that we're developing. The first, as you can see at the top, the first addition to this, we've added in the Ad Hoc Strategic Planning Committee. Those are the clear boxes with the dotted line outline along the top line in between the Board of Regents meetings. And that's just intended to indicate that this committee, the Ad Hoc Committee on Strategic Planning, will be one that we go to in between the quarterly board meetings that are regularly scheduled and depicted in the light blue boxes across the top. The month line goes through the middle. When we first presented this, we were on the first dark blue block on the left. That's August, and now we're in at the end of January. So we've had some time to put all of the pieces in place and to get some momentum throughout the seven system-led initiatives, which is the first line there. And then we are kicking off efforts in support of the AB 450 committee right now. And you'll see, those are planned to carry on through August. We have our first meeting later this week. And again, those system-led initiatives will inform the AB 450 committee, which will be brought back to the Board of Regents during the quarterly meetings. And all of that will inform the strategic planning process, which is across the bottom. And I believe we have another slide later that that shows that a little bit larger. But first, we have the strategic planning organization here. As you can see, we've updated this with the Board of Regents, of course, at the top, the board ad hoc committee, that's this committee, in between the board and the chancellor, and I'm staffing this for the chancellor, the overall strategic planning effort. The strategy advisory team, which is under development right now, to provide key stakeholder input throughout the process, and then the internal and external stakeholders that are a part of the listening sessions and some specific input sessions that we're developing for later on. I'll add here that on the left side of the structure here, it says project management, and we've gone through the hiring process, and thanks to our CFO Klinger and his team, we've identified a project manager who's going to be taking this on and managing the various pieces of the strategic planning process, and really helping all of making sure all of these different pieces are aligned and moving in the same direction. And that individual should be beginning at the end of this month or early next month. So that's our structure. It's built out, and we're carrying forward based on the listening sessions throughout this approach. Excuse me, through this approach here, which was at the very bottom of the previous two slides prior. But here you can see that the first few months through November were plan and development, and then the community listening sessions, which is, I think, the pink colored line, which is where we are right now, and those will continue through April when we'll go into visioning and really identifying the different components based on the listening sessions, some specific stakeholder engagement, and then presentation to the Board of Regents coming up in the fall as well. So with that, Vice Chair, I'd like to defer to my colleague, Dr. Brooks, for anything to add.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Cage. For the record, Constance Brooks, Vice Chancellor of Public Affairs and Advancement. I wanted to call your attention to the fact that throughout the process, the inherent throughout our process is communication, not only sharing frequent updates with the Board of Regents, but also frequent updates to various constituencies throughout the NCHE community. But in addition to that, we will house on our website an NCHE strategic planning webpage that will have all of the results of the listening sessions, the plans for future listening sessions. It'll be your go-to place to understand all that we're doing in real time and to also participate. There will be an email address. That email address is input2chancellor at nche.nevada.edu, and we'll make certain that that is more widely known. But that's an opportunity for the community at large to submit any feedback, suggestions, or questions to the team as we are trying to do our best with being responsive to the entire community. So just wanted to call attention to the communication aspects that are underway and more that you can look forward to. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor Brooks and Vice Chancellor Page as well. And I did see the page on the NCHE website, so thank you for having that up there. Are there any questions from the regents on this presentation? Oh, Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. About the communication aspect of it with the general public, can we use like a little bit more aggressive than just on our website? Can we use all social media, publications, like emails, reach out to student groups so that it's, we should go to the public, and the public shouldn't have to like chase us down to give us information. Something like the RTC did.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through you to Regent Perkins. I appreciate what you're saying, and I want to say that I was remiss in including a social media scheme within the communications plan that we have. But yes, we do intend to push things out via social media. While our listening sessions are happening, there are tweets that are taking place. And we also want to make certain that we are inviting people. And so we have a robust list through our constant contacts, as well as through other mechanisms that we are inviting the public to join us. But thank you very much for calling attention to that.
Thank you.
Yes, Regent Carter.
And forgive me if you've already answered this, but on the initiatives and all that on the schedule, that would be slide five. It has the report review. Is that going to this committee or the board, or where does that report kind of go through?
Thank you. Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, through you to Regent Carter. This is Caleb Cage for the record. That report review is really for the defining an internal process that we're reviewing the reports and making sure that they align with one another, but then that they are presented to the board after they're fully developed and complete at that June board meeting. So the report review boxes that you see, if I'm answering your question or if I'm understanding your question correctly, is referring to an internal process to just say we've done this already. Where is everybody? How are we all aligned in our process? Are the reports going to be generally the same? Those sorts of things.
Just a quick follow up from me. So where it says report briefed, that's when it comes to the board or the committee. Is that what you're?
Yes, Caleb Cage for the record. Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho through you to Regent Carter, where it says report brief, that would go to the Board of Regents at the June meeting, is the again a non-binding example or timeline of what we're looking at doing here, but we certainly would want to get it to you then.
Okay. I think that that's a good segue into item number seven. Item number eight. I keep doing that. Feedback to date in the NC strategic planning process. So I'll turn it back over to Vice Chancellors Brooks and Cage.
Thank you, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, Caleb Cage for the record. We already went over this slide here, but what I want to accomplish in this presentation here is just give you an idea, a very high level example of the sorts of things that we're hearing. If you went through the slide deck prior, you'll notice that there's an awful lot written on each one, and I promise you I won't read each slide, but wanted to capture some of the thoughts and some of the input that we were receiving from the two listening sessions that we've had to date, as well as other venues, so you can, again, start to see the sorts of things we're hearing through the listening sessions, and get an idea of what we've learned throughout this process so far. So again, here's the approach, and I don't think this slide needs any further discussion here. So I'll go straight into where we are in the timeline for the strategic planning process to date. As I said earlier, Chancellor Rose and I presented to the board during the September board meeting, provided an update during the December board meeting of what we were doing. And again, a lot of these pieces were being put in place between those two meetings in order to put us in the place we are right now, which is, in my opinion, really getting some momentum going and some traction around the strategic planning process. On December 13th, we're grateful to our colleagues at the College of Southern Nevada in the North Las Vegas campus. We kicked off our listening session there, and I will say that it was really well attended. It was perfectly coordinated by Michelle Word and her team there, just did an excellent job. And of course, you were there to kick it off, and President Zaragoza was there to provide input, and the Chancellor led a session there. And then in Reno on January 6th, we received very much the same welcome and facilitation from President Acharya and his team at DRI in Reno. So those were our first two. These slides were submitted prior to the January 19th meeting, or that would be have an asterisk or some sort of notation next to it. That was, of course, canceled last week and is in the process of being rescheduled as we speak. The January 24th ad hoc committee is where we are today, of course. So that's where we've been since September in terms of public meetings and listening sessions and how we've generated some of this input here to date. So what are the methods for input that we're receiving? They are through the listening session registration. So the registration pages that or the registration page has a free text box there where people can provide input and information. That it is not always used. I would say it's probably used maybe 10% of the time, 15% of the time, but we've been gathering anonymous information from there, depersonalizing it or de-identifying it so that it can remain anonymous information. Information or input can be provided through the listening sessions themselves. We received, again, verbal input from people who were willing to provide it there, as well as written input, particularly during the CSN session where we had note cards that were provided and pencils and everything, and that's a practice we're going to continue throughout the process as well. Just provide people a little more comfort to know they can provide that input and it's not necessarily going to be associated with them. And then finally, as Vice Chancellor Brooks was talking about, in the last presentation, we have the email address input to Chancellor, which is live right now. And we've received a little bit of input on, and that'll continue to be a part of our outreach method here, and as well as the website, of course. So that's where this information is coming from. And here is what it looks like. We focus on 3 to 4 topics per listening session. We've learned a lot in the two that we've done so far, particularly around how we're framing equity for these events. Instead of making equity a standalone issue, standalone topic, as we did for College of Southern Nevada, using equity as a lens through which all of these different topics are considered, which I think aligns with the equity statement of the board and our efforts here to promote equity within the system of higher education. So here you see workforce development. The major topics that emanated from this discussion were around credit for prior learning, stackable credentials, and the need for a statewide workforce development strategy. And so this was input from different organizations, different partners who were present, including Workforce Connections, College of Southern Nevada, all kinds of local representatives who provided this. Again, I won't read it, but this is an overview of the type of information we're receiving. And I think people were able, willing, and able to really provide some candid and helpful input. Not all of us will necessarily agree with all of it or see it from the same perspective or not, but I think it's beneficial for us to hear it. We talked specifically about equity and the topics that were discussed from the audience during the College of Southern Nevada listening session were regarding recruitment, retention, hiring, which is one of the 7 system-led initiatives that we're working on. At the system level, tracking data outcomes. In other words, how are we able to determine, back to the idea of metrics, how successful and effective we are in areas like recruitment, hiring, and retention? What are we tracking? How effective are we? How effectively are we tracking that information, and so on? There were recommendations that we engage with communities, and here's where we saw a specific recommendation coming from the listening session, and it was the establishment of community councils for the areas we serve. Maybe something worth considering, maybe something already done in some of the communities that we serve throughout the state. But we started to get to the ideas, or the ideas went from the high level to the recommendations during this discussion as well. And then finally, funding was a major discussion there, sustainability of funds, there were discussions about the current use of funds. Again, different perspectives that that came up during this meeting focused on really a lot of the conversation focused on sustainability. How can we make sure that we have a business model that is sustainable for the long term, which of course is a key component of strategic planning, in my opinion, if it's for any organization that's conducting it, to make sure that they're managing their resources appropriately. We discussed workforce development at the DRI session as well. There was just quite a bit of talk there about some of the successes, especially from the programs that are already underway, meeting the needs of the communities, the identification of needs for coordination and funding, and much like what we heard at CSN, the strategic nature of our workforce development efforts, how strategic we need to be to make sure that we are meeting the workforce needs for the next 5 to 10 years. We also discussed partnerships there at DRI. These were public-private partnerships. These were community partnerships. There were discussions about equity in partnerships that you can read all on these slides here, but particularly having to do with reaching out to the community to make sure we're meeting their workforce development needs, which is something that's which I think is critical to our success, but also something that we focus on well. Of course, we were at DRI, and so we focused on research as one of the topics as well. And as you can see here, there were input and recommendations coming in about improvements in research collaboration, how we go about providing the research needs over the next decade, and that really came down to hiring the right faculty, supporting the faculty, and ensuring that the infrastructure is in place. And then finally, the topic of systemness, which is a word I didn't necessarily know 6 months ago, but is an extremely important concept for what we're focusing on here through this strategic plan, is making sure that we are maximizing the opportunity, all of the research opportunities that we have for student research programs, research through our community colleges, research at our research institutions, and so on, to make sure that we're meeting our overall needs. The overall needs of our community. With that, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho, I'd be happy to answer any questions or turn it over to my colleagues who may have anything they may want to add.
I'm not seeing any questions. Oh, Regent Carter, please.
I'll just say thank you for the information so far. I mean, there's some stuff in there that's kind of interesting to look at. I'm just thinking back to my master's degree when I learned focus group moderation and all that kind of stuff. I was just kind of curious who is actually moderating these sessions.
So, Vice Chair Carvalho, through you to Regent Carter. So, the way they have gone so far, and we've done two, presiding board officer, for lack of a better word, Vice Chair Pro Tem Carvalho has been there, and working with Chair Pro Tem Carvalho's schedule here, provide introductory remarks. The president of the institution or their representative provide some welcoming remarks, and then we turn it over to Chancellor Rose, and there's some introductory remarks, specific comments on the topics, but then it's a back and forth between the chancellor and the audience at that point, and I think that answers your question. I'm not.
Yes, I would say that that's a good description. Vice Chancellor Brooks, did you have something to add to that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, through you to Regent Carter. I just thought it might be helpful as an illustration. It's kind of run like a town hall format in the sense that it's very open, and as folks raise their hands, we have microphones. We go around and give them the microphones. They have as much time as they need to say their piece, make a comment, ask a question. And then the chancellor does a great job of moderating and moving the conversation forward and also ensuring that there's equity in terms of people getting the opportunity to respond.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. Chancellor Rose, did you want to, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything. Just very, very briefly, my colleagues have done a wonderful job describing how the event unfolds. So to you, Chair Carvalho, to you and through you to Regent Carter, the only thing that I would add is that these, I probably had the same course in grad school around focus group and have used focus groups in my research across my career. I would say so far the audiences are really too large to meet traditional focus group needs. But some of the strategies that you employ in smaller focus groups have been useful. There are certainly things as we go into each of these meetings that we are listening for. Things that because we're all in the higher ed community that we expect to get feedback on. And so there are times, certainly during these conversations, where if I haven't heard anybody mention something that would naturally arise, I'll ask an open-ended question about that thing, because we're deliberately seeking input on something of great concern in higher education. So that's the place, I guess, where I would say I employ the focus group methodology. What I don't want to do, because as you also well know, oftentimes focus groups are about providing leading information because you're trying to curate a certain outcome. And that is definitely not something we want to do. So in that sense, when I try to tease out feedback, it's from a very neutral position rather than, trying to gin up some kind of a response that we might want or expect. So I think just from a research methods perspective, that's how I've been approaching it. And I would just add that these conversations have kind of grown organically throughout the session. And sometimes there's some major criticism of the current status of our system and how we can do better. So I think that the two sessions that we've had so far have been extremely productive, I think. And the people that have come out are very diverse in their backgrounds and what they represent for the most part. I was so pleased to see people from business and industry at DRI. They had a lot to say at this meeting and things that maybe we didn't always hear before. So I would very much encourage all regents to attend and listen to what's being said out there, because I think it's good for all of us to hear what people in Nevada are saying, and how to form our plan for the future. I mean, that's where I heard the idea of this moonshot. I mean, we had a professor from UNR, an economics professor, I believe, who was very vocal in some things that he had to say, but innovative in his thoughts, and I really appreciated what he added to that conversation. And so thank you for that question. I think that in terms of the technical aspects of how we are doing this, I think that was good input. Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments from regents? I don't think I see anything. Well, then I'm going to move on to new business. Is there any new business? Regent Carter.
So just thinking about our old plan, the five goals, I think it might be useful just to have kind of a postmortem or something like that, where we just pick a stat. I think the first one's increasing student enrollment or something like that. Just see where we were, see where we are now. Given COVID, it may not show anything at all, but I think it might be worth taking a few minutes just to see what our goals were back then, come up with a metric, and just see where we are right now to see if any of those things budged.
Thank you for that suggestion. Any other new business? Nope.
So I will move on to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There's no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Public comment in Reno?
None from Reno.
Thank you. And any public comment in Las Vegas? There is no public comment in Las Vegas. I just wanted to add one bit of information. I know that this meeting was purely information only, and I think at this point that's what we would all expect it to be. The next meeting I intend to be sometime in March or April, hopefully when we're done with all of the listening sessions and we can bring a lot more fruitful dialogue on our planning process forward to the group. So just to keep that in mind. And I really appreciate the attendance from all the regions here today. I think that this is an exciting time, and I look forward to working with all of you on our next chapter with our system. So with that said, I will adjourn the meeting at 2:51.